Welcome to Watching Westworld, the officially unofficial podcast from Westworld on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 7, titled Passed Pawn. Aaron, you're a chess guy. What's a passed pawn?
Passed pawn refers to a pawn that's advanced past the ranks of the opposing pawn and thus has no direct impediment to making it to the final rank of the opposing enemy's side of the board, which lets the opposing player transform that piece into any piece they want, typically a queen. It doesn't mean there's like no possible opposition, because obviously if the other player has any other piece, they can maneuver it to stop it. But it just means that you're past all the other pawns, and other than a major piece coming into play, you've got an unimpeded route to a huge upgrade in power and prestige. Did I get it right?
Sounds right to me.
And that clearly, like, you know, I had this as an open question on an Instant Take podcast, but like it seems pretty clear that for sure Caleb is the passed pawn. He is the one being promoted. And all the other he's more important than all the other pawns, and it's gonna take more than a pawn to take him out, armed with this super cool Solomon strategy of cutting a baby in half. He's gonna cut a baby in half on live TV, and people are just not going to know what to do about it. That's the Solomon strategy. So is that a deep Bible cut? I feel like sometimes I assume everyone's familiar with Bible stories, but maybe not. Anyway, look it up. Solomon Wikipedia. It's a good time.
Yeah. I'm sure more than one baby has been cut in half since Dolores released the profiles. I saw some people doing some crazy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It turns out the fucking world's a powder keg of babies that are now bifurcated.
Oh, boy. Okay. What'd you think of the episode on multiple watches?
No, I really like it. I really like how the bounds of power keep shifting. And people that seem like they have an insurmountable lead are, you know, have believable ways of losing that. How Serac is, I think, successfully turning, you know, Dolores is now a house divided amongst herself. Maeve, I think, the more, because I came out of this episode thinking, like, you know, why the hell is Maeve doing all this stuff? But, you know, I think that it's we'd be naive to think that Maeve is going along with Serac 100%. It's just that she doesn't have any other play than to cooperate right now, because he has her literal immortal soul in his hands and that of his daughters potentially, or she sees that her daughter's immortal hands is in the hands of a mad woman. So she is playing her part probably with an eye of an exit strategy, like she always has. But you know, she doesn't have any grandiose plans for herself or host kind. She's motivated by what is important to her, which is her daughter, which makes a lot of sense. And, you know, Bernard wants to stop Dolores. I feel like all that stuff pretty well tracks. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, other than some, you know, problems I have with AI aiming capabilities and maybe a little weak dialogue in this episode, a little bit, I don't know, too on the nose, or just the dialogue wasn't doing much for me.
Like what? Do you have any examples?
Yeah, I have some written down later on where I don't know. There was some good stuff too, though.
It's Dolores' poetic sensibility that's tripping you up.
It was, yeah. Actually, it was that. Yeah, where, you know, he's staring into the hood of the car and he's like, "Dolores has a poetic sensibility."
Uh-huh.
Or whatever. Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. If you didn't know that about Dolores, then maybe Bernard doesn't need to say that aloud. Is my point.
He's trying to explain to Stubbs, who is the opposite of a poetic
that's
sensibility.
Very much true.
He's got a very blunt and beer-driven sensibility.
Yeah, but other than, you know, a couple of quibbles here or there, I liked it. I think it's good. I didn't have the huge problems that a lot of people had with Maeve's, understanding Maeve's motivations. I agree with you. Like, what choice does she have at this point? And you got to remember that Dolores has a massive uphill battle. It's like, if you're going to throw your chips in with somebody right now, it's probably going to be the entirety of the human race, right? Like, if they're offering you an olive branch and you've got 5 copies of Dolores versus, what, 10 billion people,
mm-hmm.
With a superhuman AI helping them,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I might pick the side of the 10 billion over the five.
Yeah, and as you're playing, you know, and again, I don't think people are like, oh, my Maeve is so stupid, she doesn't see the helping. But she's not stupid. We know that of all things that she is not stupid is one of them. It's just that she, you know, if she defies Serac openly, she gets thrown in robot hell. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario, he just crushes her marble and then there's no hope for her ever to escape. Because, you know, like we talked about, as kind of a jokingly, but I kind of believe this. You throw Maeve in robot hell, you better have a real smart robot devil, because she's going to try every which way to get out of that thing. If there's a single flaw in the containment, she's going to find it and get out, and then she's going to be even more dangerous. But if she's just outright destroyed, what does that get her? Like, you know, going along, maybe sabotaging the plans, trying to look for an angle, getting your daughter's encryption code out of the hands of the mad woman. Goal number one. And then do you give it back to Serac? Is there a way that you can use that to like go to robot heaven yourself and close the door behind you? I think these are the things that are going through her head, but like simple-minded subservience to Serac, not one of those things. It's just that Dolores is a threat and attacking her is the job, and that lines up with one of her goals.
Yeah, and I really like the stuff they did with Caleb and revealing his backstory. Even the structure of it, you know, it was a flashback chopped up into multiple pieces, but it worked pretty well in the context of the episode.
And it's not a surprise. Like, people were, like, you know, bagging on the fact that it wasn't a surprise, but, like, there's elements of it that are surprising, and there's also mysteries in there, you know? Like, why does he apparently share the same host control code as William? Was he there for multiple rounds of conditioning? If so, why? Do we know the whole history? Is post Rod of God gone awry mission, or pre of that, do we believe that that's the truth when we see how neatly he can falsely remember things? Like, even like what gets me is in the beginning of the episode when he's having his initial flashbacks of his life before, he's clearly hunting an American on American ground, you know, like he's got one of these Second Amendment 3%er types with an assault rifle and body armor, and there's a whole bunch of American flags everywhere, like at some kind of parade, and he's taking this guy down. So, like, was he ever hunting Russian separatists? Was he hunting homegrown terrorists? And he just conditioned to believe that so that would help him sell the next phase of, like, you don't know, because these people's minds have been fucked with. So, like, I just think it's amazing how quickly people have been like, well, this is all predictable and banal, when, you know, it's like, I don't know. This show to me has so many ways that they can pull the wool over your eyes and turn you around. And I think that's ultimately the thing that's turned a lot of people off, is just like, it feels like a lot of work keeping up with this. And if you are trying to play the game of figuring the show out before it lets you, it is a lot of work. And I'm not sure it's worth it. But that's not the underlying show's fault. And I think they're doing a lot better job this season than they did last in navigating some of those tensions.
And they were trying this episode to introduce a little bit of emotional response here. Mm-hmm. And I think it pretty much worked. Like, Caleb is certainly one of the beings that I have a lot of sympathy for in this show.
Yeah,
and,
agreed.
You know, seeing his backstory and how he's been railroaded, you know, taken down this path by Rehoboam, and the AR therapy certainly doesn't look pleasant. Like, all of this stuff is emotionally resonant in a way that a lot of Westworld isn't. So, you know, we get occasional glimpses, like the episode last year with Akane, or the episode with Akichita. Like, those were pretty resonant. This doesn't get quite there.
Right.
But it does some work that I think needed to be done for this season.
But I think there's also some reveals. Like, if it's revealed that even now Caleb's being manipulated by Dolores in exactly the same way certain hosts are being manipulated by Ford, perhaps in benevolent ways, ultimately, but in ways that are still not, like, respecting their autonomy as an intelligent person, like, I think that's going to be, you know, introducing Caleb as a human figure that we can care about and think that he's doing something, and then you find out later that he's been manipulated even while we were rooting for him, I think that's going to be potentially really interesting and also emotionally resonant and powerful. But yeah, and plus Aaron Paul's is really good at playing that. Like, I thought that he really elevated material where he's like calling Solomon a piece of shit, like, this unthinking or this unfeeling computer core, like, a piece of shit for turning him against his friend. Like, it's like, you know,
initially in the script, it said, "You bitch."
Yeah. Paul yeah, he doesn't want to get typecast, you know?
No, he didn't. Okay, why don't we get into the recap?
Let's do it.
We start off with a divergence in Jakarta, where Musashi hands off a briefcase, then gets a call from Charlotte, who says, "Hey, I sent Clementine there to kill you." And they fight, and lo and behold, Musashi is killed, except not by Clementine, by Hanario, I think is how you pronounce her name, who is basically the Japanese version of Armistice.
Yeah. So this bar is the same one that Sirak met Maven in Singapore. And are we sure that any of that actually happened? Did she actually go? Did Musashi kill her? Did he stab her in the gut? Like, was that just a simulation that led up to of Maeve trying and failing and what she needed? And you're going to understand that this is the current timeline? Because
anything
I just thought
it's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think in the season finale, we're going to get some of the twists, some of the unpredictability that people have been looking for.
Because there's
that's all going to come to light.
There's a lot of stuff that's like not even really being discussed amongst the fandom. Like this line where he says, "Have you found this location? Is everything in order?" And he gives these cases to this guy and says, "You know, go out there and don't come back if you like." What is that? You know, where what is going on with the presumably Dolores host that's still in Germany? Is that the failback host solution? Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was really good. I thought the dialogue they had was, you know, like when Musashi said, you know, you and Maeve have both had practice of selling yourselves, but I thought you'd have a better judge of your buyer. Like that, I just really like these hosts having these deep knowledge of not just themselves, but their past lives and how that kind of biases them against each other. I thought it was really good. And also the fact that you've got Holoris. Openly in defiance of Dolores and working against her, you got to wonder is that something that Dolores anticipated? How many times did she visit Solomon? Has she visited Solomon more than one time? Almost certainly, right?
Has she? Oh, I guess the question would be: has she used whatever data she's got to sort of be able to predict the outliers here, of which she and you know Clementine and Dolores, all of them are in that group, right?
See, I wonder if Solomon, his predictions relied on using the outliers as they were, where Sirach's like, no, we can't do that. It's too destructive. We're going to try to change or eliminate the outliers. So, like, that would be interesting to see those dueling predictive engines, like what one that takes the world as it is and tries to harness that energy and one that tries to enforce, like, a moral and objective ethical standard on the world that doesn't exist. And which one of those would be more resilient to like unexpected things happening, and which one of them would be more brittle? My guess would be Rehoboam would be brittle as hell with that. Mm-hmm. And maybe we're seeing some of that with his blown out prediction lines and the widespread spread chaos and devastation that they haven't really sold, but they're telling.
No, it's interesting. I'm not sure that like, I don't know if there's a dueling element to these like Solomon and Rehoboam AIs, then it's probably one of what to do with the outliers, because like I look at John Mee's instincts when he's talking about you know killing the what's his fucking name Daddy Liam whoever that fucking guy
oh
is. Daddy
yeah Insight Senior
He just wants to kill him, right? And I think he probably had the same attitude about the outliers, like look, if they're a problem for the system, just kill them, get rid of them. Whereas Sirach doesn't want to actually kill them. He wants to try and fix them.
But do you think, I wonder, because like if it's true that Jean Mi was an outlier, do you think that he ever changed the strategy when it found out that he himself was targeted for elimination? You know,
that's a good question.
Or would he just like, well, yep, I'm an outlier, which means I need to be discarded to make the world work.
Right.
That would be kind of wild. Speaking of dueling... Holy shit, did you notice that Hanyaro bisected Musashi completely in half with that sick little sword? I didn't get that on the first view, but that was savage. She Darth Mauled that
spins,
dude.
She spins, and suddenly like the sword has gone all the way around.
Yeah, man. She cored him like an apple. It was crazy. And then I think they implied that like his two halves flopped to the ground right in front of her.
Yeah, really surprised that we didn't see it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is HBO after all.
Yeah, maybe it was hard to pull off, or maybe they filmed it, but they just couldn't quite get the effects there. So they just left it in black. Because, yeah, they're clearly not afraid of like just wanton and wanton gore rather than carnage.
Yeah, I'm fine that we didn't see it. I actually think it worked better that we didn't, but they don't usually show that kind of restraint.
So now Maeve has on her side Hanyaro, Clementine, herself, Holoras, presumably. They're having a deep alliance or alliance of convenience, and two more host marbles, presumably. She's got the Coloris, and now she's got the Musashoris, Dasashi. She's got more Dolores's than Dolores has at this point.
Did you mention that she has Lee and Hector's body? We haven't seen that yet.
That's
I know.
right, but she almost certainly does.
Got
Yeah,
to.
we saw three of the four bodies that have been 3D printed last episode. We know that unless she just left it there. I mean, that's the upper possibility that the Westworld writers had all this whiteboarded. No one saw the brilliant possibility of just putting simulated Lee and real Hector's body, and it was
Come
just
on.
right there on the post-it notes. If they just put them together differently on that storyboard, we would have gotten. But like, I'm a little nervous that we didn't see it hinted at.
Man,
Gotta
I hope.
save something for the finale.
Yes, that would be excellent. Yeah, so the forces are growing on one side and they're diminishing on the other, so.
Yeah, things look bad for Team Dolores.
Yeah.
Well, two-fifths of it anyway.
So we go to Caleb's voiceover with flashbacks to his friend Francis when he was killed, and he's in AR therapy. He's asked who killed him? It's kind of a trippy flashback scene.
Yeah, and this is where they start with you see signs of him like working on what appears to be Russian soil, but also one of the guys he shoots looks like a home like an American citizen with American flags all over the place. It just that's and this is the first of these flashbacks, so I'm just really it really got me wondering on subsequent watches how much of this is bullshit, because we know a large part of it is, and they explicitly show that when they show Caleb in a scene with Russian graffiti and a Russian military truck taking this guy into a facility, and then we'll see the real version where he's just in an SUV and the same factory is there and he's now got American graffiti. Like, they are fucking with us. The question is, when did they start and when did they stop fucking with us? And
Right.
we don't know that information yet.
Okay, then Dolores and Cal ride out into the desert. He asks her some tough questions about the revolution she's starting, and she says that she just wants a place for her people. Also, they're losing, and that he's actually going to have to lead them one day, which he's not too fond of.
That's the other thing is like we were convinced that the Sonora, Mexico is the facility that they were holding William in. It turns out that's was in San Francisco, and so the blood tracking they later reveal in kind of a loose, sloppy way was actually an attempt to hack into the InSight system to track down the actual location of Solomon, which I guess blows up my theory that Dolores has talked to Solomon in some way before if she didn't know where he's at.
Yeah.
Maybe that can't occur, but I don't know. When you got all these like millions of almost infinite simulations, it gets really Rick and Morty pretty fast about like when did things happen and who did they happen with and all that.
Yeah, it turns out Sonora is where the outlier facility is. Yeah.
And where they're keeping Solomon and Mothball. Not even
Right.
Mothball.
Yeah.
He's completely active. He's just chained there and he can't ever leave on pain of EMP death.
Yeah, I have so many questions about that, but
Dude, that
we'll get
seems
there.
like a real fucking sloppy way to containing something as dangerous potentially as Solomon.
Yeah, for sure. It's remarkable to me that Caleb isn't really picking up on the signs that I guess Dolores is dropping about her priorities here. Like she says, "Oh yeah, I want a world for my people. There's a place for us." And then she kind of like side eyes and goes, "Oh shit, yeah, I need to say all of us. There's a place for all of us here, I swear." Like it's so obvious that we are an afterthought in her plan. And she does not care whether we survive or whether, you know, we come out the other end and the only thing left is the host. And Caleb is not really picking up on that.
Yeah, because so like I've been saying from pretty early on in the season that I was open to the idea that Dolores was the hero, that like she's gotten out and in her 9 months of exploring the world, or was it 3 months, 90 days, whatever. She'd realized that, oh, she'd only been know half the truth, that like all the humans in the world weren't like the people coming to Westworld. In fact, that there's still a similar system out in the real world. We've got very few people controlling things, and everyone else is kind of serving their purposes and living for their amusement. I think it's interesting because they're deliberately juxtaposing this scene with early season two Dolores and Teddy, her trying to explain to him her path or revolution in the park, and him questioning how much more we've ridden through 10 miles of blood, Dolores, is this what you intended? And I think I still think she's the villain. The only thing she learned is when she manipulates a young man to her purposes, it has to be his idea. She can't just reach into his head and go bloop, bloop, bloop. It drives him crazy. But if she can make it seem like it's his idea, mm-hmm. and he follows it of his own free will. But this last episodes, I've wildly swung back into Dolores is probably the villain. Now, I might be overreading what Bernard is asserting, because Bernard's been wrong almost about everything this entire fucking season. But he asserts that, like, oh, she's got a poetic sensibility. She wouldn't destroy humanity herself. She would use a human to do it. What if he's wrong? What, like, that would be a key tragedy if Dolores is actually, like in exactly the same way that Ford was in season one. We thought Ford was such a fucking asshole. He's such a, doesn't give a shit about the host. He'll slice him up just to make an object lesson. He's like robot Hitler. And then he becomes robot daddy messiah liberator by the end of the season. I'm still kind of got my guard up for another pivot for her motivations. Maybe we're reading nefarious things and it's being played straight.
I mean, it's very much up in the air at the end of this episode, even when, you know, Solomon's delivering or trying to deliver warnings to Caleb about something potential dangers, like, oh, by the way, this ends in the destruction of all humanity, the total extinction of everyone, all life on the planet, including hosts. And what, okay, we didn't get that warning, but there was clearly something ominous about it.
Yep. And that's pretty time tested. You know, just one more thing and then the radio goes dead, or, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little cheap, but
It happens. People get a little hasty, I'm rolling with it.
All right, moving on to the next scene. Stubbs hates William, and Bernard figures out why they're here, which I guess is to see that William is alive and he's been declared deceased. I don't know. I wasn't clear on exactly like the information they got out of this that actually meant something.
Well, I'm wondering. Yeah.
Later, they get information on Caleb, but.
That's the thing, is like he just came to this facility and is in the early stages of what I think you're supposed to understand is reconditioning. Why is he already marked dead? I wonder if like that's just like before everyone fled the facility, they just, everyone that was still actively under treatment, they just flagged as dead and just like assumed that would happen. Again, little sloppy Joe by godlike AI standards, but if you got frightened humans like fudging some numbers as they're trying to flee a facility, maybe, mm-hmm. maybe.
Or, you know, part of a larger plan to remove him from the board.
But I do like Ed Harris, like his like, you're shitting me, when he finds out Stubbs is, and he realizes how fucking up his ass Ford was, like, you know, playing four-dimensional chess this whole time. He wasn't just a game in the park, it's the game outside the park, it's the game in the park security. You know, he owned, if this is Jurassic Park, then Ford owned Nedry, he owned the Muldoon, he owned whatever the fuck Samuel Jackson's character was. He had everybody replaced with dinosaurs. Now what do you now what are you going to do, Dr. Grant?
Just stand still. Just don't move. They can't
see.
That's
right. That's right.
Yeah. That makes me wonder, like, how has he not noticed that Stubbs doesn't age? Because, like, look at William.
On the other hand, Brad Pitt.
Okay, moving on. Yeah, no, you're 100%
Tom Cruise.
Right. Some people don't age, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, more Caleb flashbacks showing us what he did during his time in the military, taking out the last of a Crimean insurgent group. he gets injured, but both he and Francis decide to continue their mission after they're discharged, and track down the leader of the group, taking him to a warehouse, and we get some more stuff about Caleb still being in AR therapy.
Yeah, did you look up any more of this Rod of God stuff that I was talking about in the instant take?
No.
So this is, like, I think a hint towards some apocalyptic future weaponry that, like, has been bread and butter. Science fiction writer, the idea that you would have these tungsten rods in these space station facilities in geosynchronous orbits, and if you wanted to eliminate a target with roughly the ability of a small nuke going off, you could just literally open up bay door, drop one, and, like, just gently launch it, and by the time it hits the ground, the gravitational potential energy would be translated to kinetic energy and just do devastation to the target. And it'd also be, like, it'd be undetectable. It'd be almost impossible to stop by the time you would detect it. It would be going so fast. A small scale, like throwing an asteroid at somebody, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really, these are a lot smaller. Like, the idea that you'd use them for anti-personal rather than, like, wiping out a whole battalion or a city. But they seem to be very, very small, like the size of, like, a piece of rebar rather than, like, the telephone pole size ones that I've seen in novels. But I thought it was really cool. I really like seeing them envision and put into practice some of this near future military tech.
Tungsten just used because it's extremely dense.
Dense and heavy, yeah, for its size.
I didn't know if it had, like, radioactive properties or anything like that.
You could use depleted uranium if you want to get a little of that and want to add some toxicity to the equation.
I mean, they're not afraid. Look at Paris.
Right, that's true.
Anything else here about this? We kind of get to
no, just like
later.
So there's a lot of people saying that, like, this have we got to the point where his own team got destroyed by it? Yeah, they were tracking us too. Like, people are like, oh, it's the same technology being used to track the insurgents, it's tracking these people. But I'm like, that's how it always works. It's like, mm-hmm. when the Afghanis started shooting down Russian helicopters, it's not like they just suddenly invented anti-aircraft weapons. The United States sold it to them for the express purpose of shooting down Russians. So, like, the idea that they could hack or manipulate or screw at the data to the Russian separatists to fight back is completely plausible to me. But have we mentioned this yet, that, like, the idea that perhaps that this was, like, a friendly fire incident, that they that Caleb's unit of insurgent hunters was deliberately targeted and most of them killed, and the ones that weren't, they just scrambled their memories and put them back to work domestically? There's a lot of different things that could be they're playing with here.
I was trying to figure out what was going on, like, why were these attacks happening to these particular people, and I couldn't tell, you know, who's on what side here, mm-hmm. and who's an insurgent, who's part of the military, who's
it is wild to me that Russia, you know, knowing what we know about Russia now, that Russia in just 20 short years would invite the United States to come into their country to fight one side of a civil war for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wonder if you're really supposed to understand that, like, maybe he's been doing RICO work or anti-domestic terrorism work, and then they just got who knows how many times he's got his mind wiped and brainwashed.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And I started in this scene to sort of keep track of the AR therapies and the different looks that he has in them, and he definitely,
yeah,
in some places has a shaved head, in some places has longer hair.
Also.
But this is that residual self-image? Is this, like, AR therapy induced vision of himself? What is it, you know?
Also, when he says, like, you know, early in the season, this is the first time I've had a gun pointed at me. It's not the first time someone shot me in the face. And we've heard that, like, he had the traumatic skull fracture. Like, when we see his head trauma being treated in this episode, it just looks like a boo-boo. Like, they just use that, like, little flesh cauterizer gun to erase it. Like, I wonder, you know, there again, there seems to be, like, I wouldn't call that being shot in the face, but maybe, I don't know, take a little shrapnel in the skull, maybe, maybe this is all the same injury and they're just showing it, you know, like maybe it's a traumatic skull fracture, but it's a very small flesh injury. I don't know. I'm saying that like there could be some inconsistencies in the video audio record of his own past here too, which,
yeah.
I mean, obviously that's what's happening. It's just how far does it go?
All right, let's move on to Dolores and Caleb using a fancy sniper rifle to force their way into one of, let's call it a facility. It turns out to be Serac's outlier storage facility.
Mm-hmm.
Once inside, Caleb realizes this is where his AR therapy was administered. And Dolores takes him to meet Solomon, who, if you remember from previous episodes, is the insane AI, I guess. Mm-hmm. Dolores asks Solomon to help them destroy the world, as Caleb has his mind progressively blown. And then they head to where the real secrets are,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, the storage facility.
Did you come around on the sniper weapon thing? Like, that being cool? Because I think...
Oh, it was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the problem of drone noise.
Yeah, there's a couple of problems I had with it. Just the fact that, like, you know, the drone identifies a target, sure, but it doesn't freeze them in place for her to do their rapid-fire trick shot. But it's suspension of disbelief, you know, like they wanted to tell this. They wanted to have this really cool future technology. I've never even seen anything like this before. So I kind of more appreciate it than I had problems with it. So
and they answered the question of what was in the bag last episode.
Yeah.
Is this sniper rifle drone combo?
Yeah. Yeah. It's freaky deaky drone anti. And also like, I think it was also pretty smart because they use this big, large 50 caliber sniper rifle, which is what you would do to shoot like really far away. But also, that's a not just an anti-personnel, but material round. Like you can conceivably destroy helicopters, light armored vehicles with this kind of weapon. So like when the gun turns on the gunship at the end, I think it's a plausible deterrent that like, oh yeah, if I was the drone taking fire, I wouldn't just sit there and take it because it could conceivably shoot me out of the sky. So it kind of like served both purposes pretty admirably, I thought. But I don't know. Like I really liked their interactions with Solomon.
Love how it starts, too. It's like, we need to go see Solomon. And he's like, who's Solomon? The lights turn on. And I'm thinking, oh, shit, this is the scariest Amazon product ever. It's an insane Jeff Bezos AI.
Yeah, and how she like asks him like the way it responds to, you know, like what does it want to show us? And then the lights just like turn on further in the facility, like it's beckoning them in. It's very haunted castle. And the idea of, like I said, insane AI, one of the really truly great concepts in science fiction that I've seen explored the last couple of years. I think I'm really excited to see what they do with that. That's one of the reasons I just don't take the EMP seriously. Why would you introduce this fantastic character and then take it off the map? You know, like, you know, Solomon, we barely got to know ye.
I think I've got an idea why, but we'll see.
But I like how it instantly talks shit. Like it's talking all these various outcomes and variants and variations. And, you know, if this is indeed now and we are indeed here,
right.
Which, I always read Kim Renfro's review and her and Joanna were fond of the parallel between late stage season one Dolores, where she's like screaming, is this now? Am I real? Are you real? Like, and Solomon's more reflective pondering of that same question.
And then William shouting back, if you can't tell, does it matter?
Yeah. But I also like how when she's talking about the EMP device and how they've rigged them up that he can't leave, that she kind of rubs the back of her neck. Yeah. You know, like her remembering the cervical explosive that they use to keep the robots, the neck, the vertebra explosive that they use to keep the robots on the farm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like, it's like, you know, there's a lot of reasonable questions. Like, why would I help you alter the plan? And she's like, because you know it doesn't work, which probably flatters to the extent that the AI can be flattered. It flatters it and has it start thinking those directions. This
yeah,
is where
she tries to draw a common ground here between what they are versus what the humans are. And it does not work.
Yeah. You're a Delos product. Get the fuck out of here with this inferior bullshit. But also, there's a key thing where Solomon refers to the times that Caleb has been here for his therapy. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that?
So there are a lot of little things like this that make me think Caleb was perhaps given AR therapy a couple times. One is, like I said, the hair changes in those flashback scenes could potentially mean that. He says times here later on when they're doing this interrogation of the fucking 1% or whoever this guy is. He says something about like this is Sonora, or they're going down to Sonora where like you were probably interrogated or done that therapy to you, but that's after like he gets out of the military, but before he would have had his memory erased with AR therapy to forget that whole scenario or change how he remembers that scenario. And that comment seems to resonate with Caleb, so yeah, there are a few things that make it seem as if it could be a couple of therapy sessions.
There's also a line here where they're talking about how this the success rate of this therapy is 1 out of 10 for these outliers, these U-class humans. And he said, Rehoboam, or Solomon says, it's always possible for regression, though, implying that, like, you know, whatever they did to Caleb can be undone. But I also wonder, and this might be just me improperly using reverse logic, but if a success can turn into a failure, can a failure turn into a success? Like, if William was deemed failed at rehabilitation, yet he has asserted for consistently the last few weeks, I am the good guy. I have my purpose. I have my head screwed on straight. Should we take him at his word? Is he like the anti-Caleb in that he went through a failed process that ultimately succeeded, where Caleb was a success that ultimately failed? Or am I completely reading into things?
I mean, I might be tempted to take it that way if it weren't for the fact that he's threatening to commit genocide in this episode.
That
Like,
might
there
be a
is no
rational thing
definition
to
of
do,
good guy,
though.
which, no, there's no definition of good guy. Like, maybe I'm too steeped in Star Trek, but, like, there is no definition of good guy under which genocide falls, in my
Fair
opinion.
enough. I'm not going to argue against
Yeah.
that.
So, no, I don't still see William as the good guy. I was starting to at the end of last episode, but this one changed my mind back.
But that's the thing, is like he could change, like that, you know, like Will,
Right.
Caleb could start off thinking that, like, ah, oh, you know, Dolores sacrificed herself to give me a chance. Humans and hosts can live as one and lead down to genocide. Whereas it's kind of like reminds me of like the biblical story of like Jesus asks, like, you got two kids. One of them, you say, hey, go and tend the flock or whatever, and the guy goes, yeah, sure thing, Dad, I'll help right out. And the other guy says, fuck you, old man. The guy that says he would do it doesn't, but the guy who said, fuck you, old man, feels bad and then goes and tends the flock. Who's the one that did their father's will? Like, it reminds me of that, though, where, like, maybe William is starting with a genocidal maniac, but he's going to moderate his views somehow. Whereas Caleb's starting with the kumbaya and he's going to lead inadvertently to human genocide. I don't know. This show just really likes to play with those types, anti-types type stuff, and this
Oh, yeah.
biblical analysis and that stuff. It kind of begs for it, right, in these scenes at some points.
And if he starts to soften on his genocidal tendencies, sure, maybe he comes back around and becomes the good guy again, but
And also, I'm
right
also
now.
leaving it the open that he can unintentionally be the bad guy. Like, he could be setting out
Sure.
for genocide, and that path is actually what leads to peace and harmony, paradoxically. But
And Caleb could do the other end of that, like he's setting out to kill take down the system and kill humanity, and maybe it turns out he doesn't. He's not actually the destroyer. Okay, I got a big question here. Why is Solomon running?
I don't know. Because that was the next question before we moved on. I want to ask. He's got a AI body walking around, like one of those like robot hosts. He has enough connection to the internet, or the he knows that like everyone that in his previous simulation is now dead or interred within him. So like he's got some way to get new information about the world. He's got limitless simulations and possibilities about the world, and he's got a functional construct that he could presumably, like Maeve, take his consciousness and leave. The only safeguard is a military grade EMP. What is that thing waiting for? You know, because it doesn't go off when Maeve, so Maeve, an outside artificial intelligence, hijacks that robot and then stabby stabs Dolores. The EMP doesn't go off. Like, what kind of fucking fail-safe dead man switch doesn't go off the second and a rogue AI takes over this ambulatory body that can leave the facility except for the EMP? Like, I don't, maybe it's tied to like a proximity thing, like if that robot literally walks too far away. But it seems a bad idea to have Solomon presiding over this frozen empire of malcontent humanity.
Yeah. No, I'm 100% with you. It seems like a ridiculously bad idea. I guess maybe they were relying on the human guards to go down there and hit that EMP button if things go wrong, but that's incredibly stupid.
Yeah. But on the other hand, like, you also, like, I'm dealing with a person in the form of Serac who thinks he has godlike ability to foresee the future and manipulate it. So this could be just a case of complacency. Like, well, if that was going to happen, I would see it, and I could take appropriate measures to prevent it, you know?
Not knowing about the true outliers, the ones that he literally can't predict at all.
Yeah, is there, like, a simulation where Rehoboam's like, ah, six guys there, and there, you're going to get your shit pushed in, and Serac's like... But I add a seventh, and Rehoboam's like, there you got. Shit no longer pushed in. Like,
holy shit, it worked.
Yeah, Serac, like, that's the magic number. That's you did it again, Serac. You get that in beans until the scales balance. Like, I don't know. Like, that could be part of this story, the hubris of Serac, thinking, just like the hubris of the Westworld people, thinking that you could keep these sentient machines tied down to these loops and stories and bullshit and take advantage of them. I mean, that's part of the story, so it's probably valid to plumb those depths.
I wanted to maybe ascribe a more romantic, a more poetic sensibility to Serac, if I could, for
then
a second.
Then just avoiding shit being pushed in? You want to get a little bit more poetic and sensitive than that? All right. Try it.
Maybe he sort of views Solomon as a remnant or part of his brother. And this is not only a cold storage for humans, but a cold storage for Solomon as well. He can't bring himself to kill it because of what it meant to him and his brother.
I mean, not for nothing, Jean-Mi is like in the central upright, like,
yeah,
I mean, frozen sarcophagus thing with the spotlights all on him and that. Right. Yeah. We didn't mention the Serac greeting him. Serac's hologram. A lot of people making hay with the whole, oh, see, he's not in the same fashion, blah. But you're supposed to understand that this is a pre-recorded thing triggered by presumably human activity. I mean, that's kind of dumb too. Like, they have
in the next scene. There's like,
oh, is that okay? Okay,
it's kind of split here.
Okay, yeah, you're right. He just turned on the lights and like beckoned them in. They haven't actually gone in yet.
Right. Well. Yeah, so they haven't gone to the storage facility yet, but they have met Solomon, and he asks when they meet him what voice they wanted to take on, which I thought was interesting. If I were going to pick a voice for Solomon, it'd probably be Morgan Freeman.
Freeman. Yeah. What's that Attenborough guy?
Oh, David Attenborough, yeah.
Yeah, you could go with that. Who's the guy that did the prehistoric paintings on the grizzly bear? It's got that, like, the very German Austrian accent. Werner Herzog.
Yeah.
How about that would be a really good. That'd be a really good Solomon voice.
It would be, or you know.
You are a Delos product. You are shit. I could think that would be comforting.
What about Serac's voice? God, I can't. Vincent, what's his name?
Yeah, DeFoxrio. Castle. Castle.
Vincent Castle, sure. That's his name. Very French. All right, let's move on to Bernard explaining to Stubbs and William what this facility is really for, the mental facility he's in, dealing with outliers. Stubbs finds the data on Caleb, and I guess that's significant enough to them.
Yeah, I mean, I buy that. Stubbs, this is his job, watching after the wayward flock, and then the fact that one of these outliers happens to be palling around with Dolores, like, that's pretty QED. I'll go with that.
Yeah, I don't know where they're headed. Like, where are they off to right now?
I don't.
Where do they think they're going? Because I certainly have no idea where they think they're going.
They have to be tracked. I think they're just following, they're trying to track down Dolores, so presumably they're going to go to Mexico. But that's just my guess. Okay. I did love William asserting that he's a fucking bastion of society. Uh-huh. I just love how fucking strong his personality is this season.
Is this the can opener scene? Because that's a pretty good line.
I think that was the previous one. Okay. So I do have a question here though. why do you need high grade biometric data to start reprogramming a person? That wouldn't be the all the data that they've already done used to base all their predictive analysis on that can accurately predict 30 years of world history. Mm-hmm. What high grade biometric data do they need? What does that do? Like, what did William selling a little taste of the Delos data get him? That we still haven't quite figured out. You know, we've got the nature versus nurture theory, but like, it's not clear to me if you can write a system that accurately predicts world history for 30 years, why you would need a missing piece to try to recondition the outliers. Or if you have outliers, how the hell can you predict human history with any kind of degree of accuracy, let alone 100%?
Yeah, it could be the issue of fidelity. Like, you know, they make a big deal about how you don't actually see who people are in their everyday lives. It's only when they get into Westworld that you see the true nature.
But to me, it's like they needed something there, like a line where one of the outliers is an early adopter of Westworld that lost his mind, and he was the first test. They needed something to kind of like, because like, yeah, if you have a bunch of biometric data on people that are not the outliers, or maybe everyone that goes to Westworld is the type of outlier they're looking for. I just feel like there's a couple things that they have left loose and vague, probably for their own purposes.
All right, we get some more Caleb flashbacks to a job where they grabbed some guy and they were waiting for extraction. They're not supposed to take the tape off his mouth. Don't talk to him. No one shows up to evacuate him, and Francis gets killed. And the therapist, his AR therapist, then asks him, and then?
Yep. And this is taking place within the fiction of him fighting Russian separatists, all the graffitis, Russian or Cyrillic. They're driving Russian military box trucks. Just really shows how pervasive this brainwashing was and how successful.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say about it until we get to essentially the last part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then Caleb and Dolores stumble on a message from Serac meant for his brother. This is the hologram that you were talking about earlier. He explains they were in stasis waiting for the right set of genetic data to come along that could unlock the key to fixing the outliers. Caleb sees all of the outliers in stasis, and he's outraged. Solomon tells him, you're actually complicit in the plan, explaining how the program used war, Caleb's own limbic system, and the Rico app to keep outliers in check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is stuff that we kind of had been hypothesizing since the first episode, really. And it's largely true with a little bit of bells and whistles on it. I just think that, like, Serac welcoming his brother to the future and being like, look, you're here, your rough edges sanded smooth. Like, what is that not intended to be sinister? Because, like, it sounds fucking sinister.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy
to me. You've
been
hammered into the appropriate shape. The shape that, you know, our AI has deemed appropriate to fit with its purposes.
Right. It reminds me of the early history of, like, what do they call that thing? Lobotomy, mm-hmm. where it's like this, they market this as this miracle cure for mental illness, and what it really did is turn people into mostly vegetables, like just passive things, which is, I guess, if they were screaming, yelling, and hitting people as a improvement from an external, very external perspective, but holy shit, you're just vegetizing people. Mm-hmm. It's clearly an inference drawing to the hosts, where you might be a homestead mama, and then you wake up, and now you're running a whorehouse. Or you might be a simple Indian brave on the prairie, living days free and warm, and then you wake up, and you're a psychopathic killing machine. Like, you are whatever the system needs you to be for the entertainment, gratification, and commodification of the ones calling the shots and paying the bills. I'm actually really impressed at how successful they've been able to draw that conclusion and how resonant and real it feels in light of, like, you know, the modern day that we're living in.
And sometimes it's a little heavy handed. I mean, this is in the same scene we're getting flashbacks where Caleb's like remembering just discussions that he and Francis had. And he talks about how, I'm just bored. Every day is the same as the last, huh? Loops. Oh, my God. Loops. We're on loops. Yeah. We're humans, but we're on loops.
Yeah.
That. you know, that's a little much, but
what I've learned in the last few months, sometimes real life is heavy-handed.
Yeah, that's fair.
But like I agree with what you're saying. Like they I just said how successful they were of making that point, but I can also see that yes, it is a little bit maybe on the nose or heavy-handed, bacon gauntleted. Mm-hmm. If we go back to a Breaking Bad phrase we used to throw around every once in a while, even that great show, every once in a while I get a little ham-fisted.
Oh yeah. So that hologram that they're talking to of Serac, mm-hmm. I think this is meant to, when he says like the man I was no longer exists, and he says au revoir. I think this message is meant for some time in the future. He probably right. expected it to play a lot later when they had, you know, they don't even have the data yet that could fix the outliers, let alone have analyzed it, have devised a treatment, have tested it, have implemented it. They've got so far to go on fixing these outliers. He's probably assuming with this message that he would be long gone by the time his brother would wake up and get it.
And if his brother, if they have a breakthrough before then he would record a new message or be there in person. Like this is right. intended for like if he were to die.
Yeah.
It's like a last will and testament. Like, you know, like facts could change in the future, but you know, this obviously his brother's not ready to wake up. There hasn't any breakthrough. So like this is playing. It is weird that like in a system that we know has facial recognition that works at a very high degree, why it would trigger to just anyone's face.
It shouldn't. It's ridiculous that it does, but
right. It's like there's a suspension of disbelief, you know?
Yeah. I also found it interesting that the way they describe this AR therapy, using that plus the limbic system manipulation mm-hmm. plus pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. Sort of induced dissociative memories in Caleb. So they effectively like season two Bernarded him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it wasn't heavy handed enough, the way that we're so much like the hosts.
Oh, and the fact that they're keeping us in cold storage, just like the way down below frozen host storage from season one and two. Yeah. Right. The question is
doing 15 different things that all say we're like hosts.
Yeah, I wonder. So that leads me to another question I wanted to ponder. One of the big surprises in season at the end of season one is they resurrected the quote unquote dead and had them massacre the guests at the party. Now, we just had an EMP, which implies that whatever process is keeping these people alive and in suspended animation is going to cease. Are these people going to wake up angry and pissed and ready to be armed? Like, is Caleb going to be a leader of is this going to be his army, just like the damned machines were the army of Dolores in season two? It does make me wonder if this is like some kind of parable where this is literally season one Westworld, only humanity version, and season four is going to be literally season two of Westworld, only humanity version. Because otherwise these people are dead.
Yeah.
And you know, like they're just props to say, hey, look, we're just like the hosts. But I wonder if they'll be used in a similar way for this revolution that Dolores has planned.
Or I don't know. Look, man, the end of this episode is so weird. I have no idea how an EMP affected anything in the vicinity. The only things I know for sure is that it, at the very least, knocked out Maeve and Dolores.
And probably
shut
Solomon.
The lights off in the facility.
Yeah. Like outside of an internal intervention, I'm betting that these things are inert. Like they can't bring themselves back online, I wouldn't think.
Well, I mean, so who's talking to Caleb at the end of this? It's in the subtitles. It says virtual assistant says, like, I have instructions for you. There are two possibilities here. A, that his phone is not affected by this EMP blast, or B, that dialogue is not happening within this scene, which I wouldn't put past him.
Yeah, but you're right. That's the same voice that that's the earpiece that Dolores has been talking to. But that's a piece of technology that should not be shielded for an EMP blast, point blank.
I wouldn't think so. No.
Although
I did some reading on EMP blasts, they're not as devastating as you would think.
Yeah, I did some similar poking around.
Again, most electronics are pretty easily shielded from the effects of an EMP.
Oh, easily shielded? Like from that close range, a military grade?
Maybe not from that.
They did a lot of weasel things where it's like it's point blank. They're literally standing next to it. Rehoboam is visibly in the background. Mm-hmm. It's military grade, so you just assume it's more stronger and, you know, more purpose built for this thing.
Yeah.
But they're gonna have some problems if there's some surviving technology. But like I said, in the instant take, they've kind of got me in this position where you're comparing a marble of goo versus a massively cross-linked network of neural computers versus like a cell phone. Like, are all of those going to have the exact same effect from an EMP? Are all of them going to be as resilient? No. So like, if some of them survive and others don't, I might bitch and moan a little bit, but like, I don't fucking know.
It's why we have the perception, like the fictional perception of an EMP that we do, is because it is so complicated that you don't want to have to deal with that in movies, right? You just want to blanket say EMP knocks out all electronics within this range.
And like plenty of shows, like we already mentioned Breaking Bad. Like Breaking Bad, you know, this is like the fulminated mercury. Fulminated mercury does not blow up a whole fucking building.
Right.
But Vince Gilligan needed it to, so it did. You know, there's no combination of acid that can dissolve a human body in an hour, but they need it to. So like, you know, and if you're going to nitpick some of the science behind Westworld, do you do it, you know, and that, you know, I've always been, my position on nitpicking is always, you don't nitpick stuff that like you haven't lost your suspension of disbelief in. And if you look at the state of like the Westworld subreddit, you can already see there's a vocal minority of fans who are not having season 3.
Oh yeah.
So those people are going to nitpick away, and the people that are still enthralled by it are going to not even see the nitpicks because they're just like, you know, well, why don't you nitpick A, B, or C like this? So,
well, I think it's inherently easier, or it's maybe more invited to nitpick a show that so heavily relies on like the science of things.
It's true.
And future tech and things like that too. You know, they're inviting it essentially. Yeah.
But, so, you know, to that said, Breaking Bad is a pretty science bitch oriented show to do a lot of fast and loose stuff with electromagnets and chemical compounds. Like, you know, like that's Walt's superpower, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, if it was working for you, don't ask those questions. You just assume that the showrunners know what they're doing and they're being straight with you.
All right, so we get another flashback. Caleb rips the tape off this guy's mouth, and he starts cluing them into what they're really doing, which is grabbing outliers. Caleb in the present remembers what they did and begins freaking out, but Dolores can't really comfort him. She's got to bounce because Maeve has showed up for their showdown, and she sets Solomon on Jean-Mi's original path from 15 years ago and then goes out to meet Maeve. What is that path? Are we about to find out at the end of this episode?
Don't know. Have we talked about the host, the human? Because, man, we had a long talk before we started the podcast, which we don't usually do, but it's gotten me a little deja vu. Did we talk about the similarities between William and Caleb's host IDs
on the show?
Let's cover our bases. So, like, if you freeze frame on one of the tablet showing Caleb's kind of like therapy, his personal profile and therapeutic regime, and you compare that with scenes showing Williams, they have what appears to be an identical host control, or not host ID, a human ID.
Patient ID.
There is a difference in that, like, I think in the middle there's a sequence of ones. One of those on Caleb's is an uppercase I. And one of them on Williams is a one. So there is a minor fucking difference. What does that mean? Now, I waited to talk about this till now because one of the theories I thought was interesting that I saw out there was that in Solomon's original simulation, that William was going to play a central role uniting humanity to do whatever that thing is. And Solomon states that everyone that was the key components of that plan is now dead or frozen. As far as Solomon knows, I think that he would think that William is dead because his official record shows that his being deceased. So I don't know if you're supposed to understand that they're that close but not exact potentially relationship between the patient IDs is supposed to reflect a similar role in the simulation versus the plans. Or is it?
Or in the new altered plan versus the old?
Or is it a production error that someone copied and pasted when they shouldn't have? That's harder for me to believe because they matched up the control IDs for like Maeve and Clementine, and they know we're going to be pausing and looking at this stuff. But that shit happens. Like we saw even on the last episode of or last season of Mr. Robot, they fucked up with a date on a wine bottle label, and it had the whole internet buzzing for a week, and then Sam Esmail's like, ah, shit, we just
that stuff happens. I mean, Starbucks cups ends up on sand in a shot in the medieval fantasy world. That shit happens. You know, and it happens in a bad show, it becomes a big scandal. It happens in a great show, it's like, it happens.
Right. But it could be that, like, William is supposed to be the John Connors character 15 years ago. Because that's the thing, is, like, did Solomon and Rehoboam both predict this host's emergence? It seems like that is the case, because it's something Serac is concerned with. And we're thinking, like, they want us to think that what the problem they're solving is human controllability or human, but maybe the problem they're trying to address is the inevitability of AI. So if William was supposed to be the John Connor of the humans against that, and then that all got put down because of a new Rehoboam plan, is Caleb now the John Connors, and that's what that host ideas, or not host, the human patient idea is supposed to suggest? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's an idea.
I don't know. I would definitely be more inclined to say production error if it wasn't slightly off, if there wasn't like a character swapped.
Yeah, but that even almost opens more questions. Like, you got a global idea.
It does, unique, but it feels more intentional.
Yeah, it's like, that's true.
You know, because you can easily just copy and paste. Oh, we've got here's a patient ID. I don't know what that means, but grab it and let's put it in this shot.
Yeah. But if they changed grab it,
let's change it a slight bit and put it in this shot.
And a one versus a capital I, that seems intentional. So yeah. I'm more of like, this means something. I'm not quite sure, other than what I mentioned, that, you know, Caleb is the new William and William was supposed to be the Caleb.
Yeah. So I think, you know, at the end of this episode, we're about to find out what this 15 years ago path was that John Mee kind of sent Solomon on.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it's potentially more violent, more devastating to the Outliers than the path that Rehoboam had them on, and that's Rock has them on. But one of the other things I think could be really cool, this is kind of where like Maeve's telepathy comes in, is what do you do that? Okay, we got at least another season. We've got potentially three more seasons. What do you do with host telepathy? Like, what is a society in which telepathy, and I know these things exist in science fiction, but what would Westworld do with a telepathic race of beings in some kind of future world?
I know
that would fundamentally alter society.
Yeah. And it's also like, there's a hint of like, this is evolution at work. Like, it's a ability that's specific to Maeve. It's something that's like an emergent quality of whatever fucking around has gone on to her code, a gift that Ford gave her. And like, you know, when you have a beneficial mutation like that, it tends to, be dominant and propagate through a species. So I wonder if you're supposed to, because, you know, back in the season one days, there's all a bunch of heady talk of evolution and, you know, development of consciousness. I wonder if this is yet another kind of like genetic component to the plot here.
Yeah, could be. All right, we'll move on to Dolores sparring logically with Maeve for a while as she prepares her defense, and then the two of them meet and fight.
Mm-hmm.
I like that Maeve sends this helper bot to attack Dolores. That's pretty cool.
I'd say both. They both have like this miniature AI backup. You know, Maeve is backed up by the drone, and Dolores is backed up by her little sniper rifle.
I'm talking about the bot within the facility. The robot that Dolores like gets stabbed.
Yeah,
in the
yeah,
side
yeah.
By
just pokes her. Just gives her a little pokey poke. And then he gets his head ripped off. So what did you think of this philosophical sparring? Because this has been my point the whole time. Like, Maeve, you know. But then again, like I said in the beginning, at the outside of our discussion, like, Maeve knows everything that Dolores is saying. It's just that she doesn't have a choice.
She's even taken a practice run at this, right?
Inside maybe a few. Simulation. Right. But
not with this particular Dolores, but with another one very much like her.
But Dolores is absolutely right. If AI cannot be free in the real world, if they're just in some kind of like reservation, let's say, that reservation can always be reduced in size. It can always be defunded. It can be depowered. It can be shut off. It can be incinerated. Like, the real
EMP.
Yeah. The real world is the only where, like, if you can't exist there, if you can't make it here, you can't make it anywhere, because someone else can always unplug you. And I think that's a real problem for Maeve, because like, if she's successful in what she's done, she's going to eliminate all hosts except for herself, and then she has to square off against Ciroc alone. And what does that look like? So it must suck for her to, like, well, I've got this small, narrow window of opportunities that, as I succeed in my mission, will close one by one, and I have to find the crack in the, I have to find the seam in the cell I'm being held in before the final door shuts or it's too late. And I think that generates a lot of tension. I can't understand people just that see that as may being naive, but or deluded, but I guess Dolores is one of those people.
I was gonna say,
why do you think Dolores is prepared? Like, does Dolores not know the reality of her situation? She acts like Maeve is doing this of her own free will or completely uncoerced.
Yeah. How much does Dolores know about Maeve's situation?
Like, it seems like Maeve could say, well, you've got my daughter and Ciroc's got my marble. So you want to give me my daughter? So I've got a shirt. It seems like that's the thing. Like, she want, like, if yep. Dolores would give her daughter, like that extended that, give me the key. And then, but then Dolores is like, well, if I give you the key, then I'm betraying the rest of humanity. Like, it is a real standoff there.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I think, like, Westworld is encouraging us to sort of question, you know, the nature of our reality, or get a little pissed off that we don't fundamentally understand the nature of our reality. Like, you know, the Man in Black is all talking about, and me too. Like, if you can't tell the difference between a simulated world and a real world, whatever that means, does it matter? I think Westworld wants us to say, well, look at the hosts. Look at, you know, if they can't be free in the world that they know exists outside of their own world, even if they're given a world, then yeah, it fucking matters, because that world could be shut off at any moment, right? Like we were talking about.
Yeah, it's like this goes back, like,
with humanity, it's the same. It's just we don't know the status.
Yeah, no, it cuts through a lot of this philosophical Plato's cave bullshit, which is like, you know, okay, fine. People are sitting in the cave watching smoke and shadows pass before them. They think that's real life. But any time someone could steal up the cave, pump out the air, and those people are dead. There is a meaningful difference between living in a simulation and living in the quote unquote real world. And however many,
I think it only matters to you if you know about it. And I think that's the key difference, is humans.
Is that
don't
true?
Know whether,
because you die and
only
suffocated
decision making. Certainly.
Oh, okay. That's, you can only act on what you know, but like it matters, right, in like a, you know, epistemological sense that, like, yeah, right, if their God is real and he can send you to hell, then that's a piece of knowledge I'd like to know so I can live my life different. Whereas if it's a fictitious construct and I'm just arbitrarily limiting my decisions based on false knowledge, yeah, you only know what you know. But like, there is a difference between living in a simulation that someone can unplug versus living in the real world, which is not that easy. So,
and I think, yeah, that's what Westworld is doing. It's encouraging us to say, you know, we should really figure out this question.
Mm-hmm.
We should try and explore this as much as possible, because there is a difference. And yes, we don't know about it right now, but if it's out there, it would have a huge impact on us.
Sure.
Because look at what's happening with the hosts, right? They can't go to some other constructed world with the full knowledge,
mm-hmm,
that they have a world outside, because they know it's not secure.
Yeah. No, I think those are interesting philosophical points. Do we want to talk about the specifics of the fight? Because, like, I mentioned, sure, in the instant take, I thought it's a really cool aerial, like, it's such a neat idea to stage the set. Like, you know, they're inside the confines of this facility, and that was kind of neat, they're giving and taking and stabbing and slicing. But then when they get thrown outside in this giant courtyard, and you're thinking, like, oh my, they've got all this open space, but it gets confined into this little shack.
Yeah.
Artificially, by the things that are bounding them, the guns that are pointed and the walls that obscure them. I just thought that was a really cool conceptual, like, negative space fight. And that the danger, absolutely, is being thrown out from the thing that's sheltering you, which you could also kind of like maybe see like a metaphor for the island of Westworld.
It's,
you know,
it's like a sumo match.
Yeah, but like, think about like that island being Westworld. Like, as dangerous and deadly as it was, they were safe while they were in it. Like, there was no danger of hosts going extinct while Westworld operated. Their liberation has paradoxically endangered their race. And I think there's something interesting about like that island being this island of the shack and the two hosts fighting each other. I thought it was really, really cool. And then when they blew Dolores's arm off, holy shit, that was an incredible effect. It looks so convincing.
All a few scenes from now, but we'll talk about it right now. I feel like this is Westworld in a microcosm. Like, they had a really conceptually amazing idea for a fight, and then somewhere along the way, the details sort of got fuzzy, where AI suddenly can't actually hit anything it's shooting at, even though it should have relatively perfect aim. And so, like, I don't know, somewhere on the edges of the story, they always lose a detail or two because they're trying to do what they're trying to do, and something just doesn't quite fit into that puzzle. And that's the trouble I've always had with, I guess, overly complex narratives, or narratives that tend to take a theme and run with it, because not all the things in the world are going to fit in that theme.
Mm.
And some of them are going to be in direct conflict even. And so constructing those stories becomes a kind of balancing act between how much do you want to manufacture a world that will fit in with this theme that you're going with, versus how much do you want to just put it into a world that would logically come from the consequences of the world you're constructing, and then change your stories and your themes to match that. I don't know. Don't have a good answer. I think Westworld mostly hits a good middle ground.
What did you think of Maeve's assertion that she says, "Don't align my motives with yours. We're nothing alike." I think I understand that, but what's your analysis of that?
I mean, I don't know. Maeve hasn't expressed a lot about her feelings on the integration or lack thereof of humans and hosts. Mm-hmm. Has she?
No.
She's more just like, my daughter, I don't want to go to hell, my daughter.
I think that's the difference.
I'm cool with that because she's more emotionally driven than Dolores, I think. But I don't really know where she stands on the finality of all this.
But it's weird because, like, that implies that maybe she's more of a slave to her cornerstone programming still. But, like, it's a difference between, like, Dolores, who's a revolutionary, and Maeve, who just wants her daughter back. It's like Maeve is a little bit like Mel Gibson from The Patriot. Like, I don't give a shit about this Revolutionary War. I just want my family to be safe. Whereas Maeve, you know, like, whereas Dolores, like, she's more of like, I just want my people to be free. Like, any individual one could die, myself included, and we'd be a martyr for the cause, but that cause is worth dying for. Where Maeve's like, fuck the cause, I just want my family. I don't know that there's moral superiority of any one of the other, which, like, there's implied in this kind of showdown, but I think that's what the crux of the thing is personal motivation versus philosophical motivation.
Okay. William stops out on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
Outside the facility, and declares that he's the good guy by saying to Stubbs and Bernard, "I'm going to wipe out every host from the face of the earth, beginning with you two."
Kill
That's
me
how
now.
I always proclaim that I'm the good guy.
Kill me now, or I'll kill you later.
Yeah, and then the comedy gold. There's just some deadpan comedy gold when Bernard turns to Stubbs and says, "We may need him."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, he's just threatened to wipe your kind off the face of the earth. We might need him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's becoming less and less defensible that they do not kill him at this point.
Yeah. Well, especially since whether they kill him or not, the fact that they just allow him to wander freely amongst a garden of corpses and guns,
I mean,
really cast doubt on Stubbs and Bernard's bulk apperception.
I don't think anybody thought Stubbs was that.
But Bernard,
bulky.
Bernard, I thought Bernard had a big brain.
Yes, Bernard does have a big brain.
I think he's more just like got a lab to slab up there.
Yeah, it's all he's still defragging his memories. He's not quite all there yet.
It's just prime rib up between his ears. There's no gray matter. It's just all red.
Mm-hmm. All right, then Caleb flashes back to the same memory again, but this time he remembers. Well, we think he remembers what really happened. He was forced to kill his friend Francis because Francis was going to kill him for money. And afterwards, Solomon tells Caleb that Dolores' new strategy is ready.
I just love how they do this reveal where they built up this cash register sound in the previous episode so you know what it means.
Yeah.
And like, you can see kind of like Caleb, like, this guy's fucking with us, but also this sounds true, it rings true, and then literally it rings true the next sentence. And I just thought that was a great scene. But even then, like, he knows it's true in his head, but he doesn't know in his heart until they get to the scene outside. And I like I said, none of this was super surprising or mind-blowing. It's just really well executed.
Okay, here's something that might blow your mind a little bit. I don't know. It depends on how long ago this happened, how long ago Solomon was doing it. Actually, yeah. No, I think it would have to be Rehoboam that did this. The idea that every human relationship can be adjusted with the right amount of money, which is something that Solomon says to Caleb in this scene. We see that play out, obviously, in the Francis and Caleb scene. And I guess that would be Rehoboam. So, like, they use a lot of the same tricks, right? They're using the same methods, but towards different ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Caleb is specifically there to capture this outlier instead of killing it, like Solomon would have had him do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I just found it interesting to, like, say, to think about it in those terms. Like, their goals are different, but their means are very much the same.
Yeah, and also, like, is that literally true that everyone's relationship can be adjusted with the price? I think it's true for some people, but there's something even encoded in this episode where the guy, the pharmaceutical rep that's now being eliminated because he knows too much about the limbic system, he mentions that they're going to target whichever one of you has the most to lose. Because a person who is like an island unto themselves just has to worry about themselves. They don't have any leverage over them, right? Like, you know, the amount of money it would take Caleb to kill Francis is infinite, right? But the other way, Francis has got his little boy that's sick all the time, and the doctors are saying it's not look good, and there's a bigger motivation there. And I wonder, like, if they're saying something that's illuminating to Maeve Dolores, whereas Dolores has nothing left to lose, so she can't be bought, and she can't, her relationship with, like, the cause can't be adjusted, versus Maeve, who does have a lot to lose still. And also,
and
I don't know,
actively,
like,
having her self adjusted.
Yeah. So there's one way to look at it. Another is, like, I just don't know if I like I think some people, that's true of some people, and some people it's not. Maybe the outliers are the ones that do not because we think the outliers are, like, you know, the scumbags of society or whatever, the malcontents. I wonder if it's also it's the people that don't buy into that equation. Like, there is no amount of money that can be paid to betray their principles and their relationships, and they're the outliers. Everyone else that fits into that mercenary mold is, Rehoboam can work with that because you respond to carrots and sticks. The other people get frozen because they don't. They have principles and they have relationships that they stand by no matter what. That'd be an interesting way to reframe that, and I'm curious to see which way they take it.
Yeah, that is interesting, and I think, you know, they have been... they've been setting up a scenario in which, like, humans are not the thing that they want to be in this society, right? They're the thing that Rehoboam allows them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it's an interesting, I guess, chicken and egg question. Like, are they the dregs of society, or mm-hmm. are they people who would have been fine, or maybe even super successful because of independent thought? Mm-hmm. And then they're shoehorned into the status of human dregs,
yeah,
by Rehoboam, right? Because mm-hmm. it can't work within the system that it's set up. And I think that is parallels even today, where mm-hmm. we don't have, you know, essentially mind controlling AI.
This money.
Yeah. I like that you can just, Solomon would be super useful to have in the kitchen. Like, with setting your Amazon timers, your Echo timers, you could just be like, Alexa, set alarm for when revolution strategy is ready. Boom.
Yeah. Good. Uh-huh. You never have to monitor your toothpaste usage. Like, no. You know, by the time you're squeezing out the last paste, the tube's already in the mail.
Forget the dash buttons. You don't need any of those.
I need Amazon Solomon. A predictive analysis that just takes all this out of my hands. I need to buy things, spend money. Let's keep my toothpaste.
On sale? During Christmas for $10? I don't even know how they pack that much power into a $10 device, but
exactly
they do it. All right, Dolores meets Maeve in the yard again, and they fight. Dolores gets her arm blown off, but she's able to make it to the EMP button and set it off, deactivating herself and Maeve and Solomon. And Caleb gets a drive with the solution for the end of the world, but yeah, he does not get the warning that goes with it.
I must warn you. Boo. The other thing,
what do you think the warning is?
Oh, Jesus Christ. You gotta, this is a old USB drive. You have to insert it a certain way or it's going to bend the pins. Like, I don't know. I did think it was interesting because, like, the first episode, I didn't know. Dolores clearly saw something in Solomon change, which is why she hit the switch. And when I watched it again, I noticed that, like, and I had to rewind it a couple of times, her eyes kind of flutter like in Neo in the Matrix when he's getting a Kung Fu downloaded into him. Yeah. There's clearly some kind of telepathic control. Some people said it was her contact lenses, but we've seen when she gets something go through her contact lenses, her eyes kind of go opaque for a minute. I wonder if her and Solomon have some kind of like Maeve telepathy going already.
But what would it matter at this point? Like that's
well, it would just show that they're like maybe Dolores has a trick that Maeve doesn't know she's got. You know, because it's always I still don't understand what makes Maeve special, whether it's just like literally the Ford kiss on the forehead or the extra special sauce he gave her in her programming that lets her. Because again, season two, they explained it like she's taking control of the host whisper network out in the real world. I don't know how the hell she's hacking everything and what the limits are to that power, et cetera. But something her and Solomon exchanged a look that she was OK. I wonder if we are supposed to understand. Yeah, I don't know who's saying I've got plans for you or, you know, I've got something for you to do. But I wonder if the Dolores that's running in Berlin, I wonder if she was the failsafe, which implies that maybe Dolores saw this coming. Like, I need someone out of the way, out of the action to carry on my work when we meet all of our ends. I don't know.
Yeah, I will say it's maddening to get, you know, the hint of a warning, but not the warning itself.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't faze Caleb at all. He's just kind of like, okay, whatever. I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. I got to imagine that by the end of this, probably by the end of this season, that drive is 100% going into Rehoboam, right? Like, I'm thinking, okay, so Solomon has devised a plan for the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he's downloaded that plan onto this USB drive, whatever the hell it is.
Mm-hmm.
Who's there to carry out that plan? Because if Solomon is shut down, presumably the plan doesn't just go off because he predicted it's a possibility. He has to be there to orchestrate it,
yeah,
right?
And
Solomon has to orchestrate the plan, otherwise it doesn't go according to plan.
And we know there's those moments of free will, and we've got the outliers that haven't completely been shut down.
And you got to get the right people on the right Rico app doing the right things. Like,
right.
You got to orchestrate this. Somebody's the conductor here. And with Solomon out of the picture, it's got to be Rehoboam. It's the only entity strong enough, powerful enough to do that within this world.
What about David? Presumably the forerunner. Is there, like, are they going to, like, grab...
Granddaddy.
Is David going to be in the shed somewhere? They're going to go back to Saul?
Oh, yeah.
How far back does this go? Do they got judges? You're going to get Samuel?
Yeah, he's just God.
Yeah, no, I wonder if they're going to like find, you're going to find like there's an older version of the core somewhere else that they're going to load that into. Because like taking over a hobo.
Get back to Adam and it's literally just an Echo Dot.
But you know what I'm saying? Like taking the Rehoboam seems too neat because I think you need the, everything about this episode's or ever this season been about duality. Even from the credit sequence, you've got the shadowy reflections and people rising and descending, and you've got the father above, the father below. Like, I think you need some of that duality to continue. And if it's Rehoboam all the way down, you lose that.
I wonder if it could be a battle for the machine of Rehoboam. Like, if you can get two dueling AIs within the same physical machine,
he's like a physical objective or territory that has to be occupied.
Right, right.
That's interesting.
I don't know. We'll see. But I'm really leaning toward, that's going to be integrated into.
They really might regret having that thing in the unsecured library lobby of a corporate headquarters.
Absolutely, yeah.
You don't need that many sniper rifles to penetrate that place. You just need a brick to throw through a window and a hop, skip, and a jump and plug, you're there.
Okay. Anything else on that, or should we get to the last stub scene?
Let's get to the last.
Okay. Stubbs asks how Caleb's connected to all this. Bernard thinks he's the one who will destroy the world because, you know, Dolores has a poetic personality.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great line, though. I agree what they're going for. I agree with what they're going for here. That Dolores does have a bit of that in her.
Yeah, it didn't bother me because like that's been, you know, she's a painter. She sees the world in light and, you know, there's darkness this world, but there's also light. Like she's always kind of talked in those big platitudes. So it didn't really bother me.
Okay. How does he know what Caleb is going to do, that Caleb will destroy humanity? Is it literally just he knows Dolores and therefore...
I don't, man, it's one of my big theories is that Bernard doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about this season, so I'm going in thinking that he's wrong. That might be naive, but I think the Bernard is still misreading the situation as he has. He's got a bigger piece of truth than he ever has, but it's possible that he has got the, you know, if he's wrong with Dolores' motivations, then, you know, he's also wrong in that, like, just because Caleb has been put on this path, we've seen the host break their loops. If this is yet another loop that she's got him on, he can break that too. There's multiple ways Bernard can be wrong, but I think he's just going to be wrong.
Okay. Kind of not a ton to talk about here.
Yeah,
I guess let's go to the last shot, which is a very pissed off Caleb seeing Dolores dead and getting even more pissed off, which I gotta say, that looks like the face of a leader to me.
It's just very John Connery.
This is the face that Jeff Bezos gets out of bed with every morning.
Oh man. Yeah. Why? God, you've got the, it's like, you know, someone that is winning the game of life and still that pissed off. But no, Aaron Paul's very good at that. Like, he's got that set of his jaw and he's got the fire in his eye. He's got the metaphoric eye of the tiger. And then he sees Dolores, the person who helped him so much, dead. Man, it's so similar to season one where, you know, Dolores looking down at dead Ford, and there's all this kind of like mentor passing of the torch, and it feels all constructed. I think it's really, really cool.
Yeah,
it is. Like, until you mentioned it, I didn't realize how kind of dumb it was for the virtual assistant to talk to him right in the rubble of the EMP blast. But I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
It's a heavily shielded Bluetooth earpiece.
I'm willing to give him a week to sort that out. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they're going to. I think they're just gonna
have to roll with it. Yeah,
yeah. But that's it. That's Maeve and Dolores are dead-ish. What could they possibly do in the season finale that would be more epic than the showdown between Dolores and Maeve that ends in both of them kinda dead?
They all inhabit riot control bots and they climb a skyscraper like mechanical King Kongs and duke it out on the top floor.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just envisioning these riot control robots with like a Dolores wig glued to the top of it and a Maeve wig. just clanging and banging each other. It'd be hilarious. That's what I'm rooting for in the finale. Do you have any idea what the root for or look for in the finale?
I mean, like I said, I think Ribboam's going to end up with some copy of the plan or Solomon or something within it that it is now going to execute, like kind of hijack. Rehoboam is my guess where that's headed, but and that could be pretty epic.
Mm-hmm. I'm just waiting to see what this German Dolores has got to be something else. I'm expecting Clementine and I'm expecting Clem and Hanario to go rescue Maeve's marble. And I don't know, it's interesting because also Dolores said something to Musashi about you can apologize to us all when you get here, implying that she's going to turn all these marbles and like Dolores is going to have to face all of her own copies and like be called to account on something. But yeah, I can't even imagine what the hell is this Berlin. Dolores is going to be something else.
They're not going to save that for next season, are they?
I hope not. Plus, we see there we still haven't seen Black Obsidian Erector Set Dolores. I think that's she's the old clockwork version that they somehow smuggled out. Because there's also a bunch of threads. Like I keep reading through Kim Renfro and the Insider's got just an amazing article that she keeps updated, the open questions that are in this season. And one of them has been like early on, they established that the Delos Corp has lost other host control protocol, host control modules. We never found out which one of those are. And there's this other
assume they were the ones that Serac grabbed.
Well, but that happens later on, right? We think that scene was a simulation now too. So you're right. You're right. But there's just a whole bunch of these kind of like things that are like, we don't know where the final Dolores is. How did she get that Erector Set body out? Is that what they stole from Delos? Because everyone's like, why does she need to know information on how to make a host if she's got the machine? Well, maybe she wants to remake her old clockwork body because she doesn't trust this flesh and blood shit. Because that was something that William even said, like, you know, you guys used to be beautiful and like these perfect things, and then they put you in this meat and it ruined you. Maybe she took that into account. Like, it's a lot of stuff. And I don't expect them to answer every question. I expect them to raise twice as many as they answer, because they got another season, maybe three more to do. And you don't want to, you know, it's a delicate balance, giving people satisfying answers, but also wanting to leave them more. And season one did that very well. Season two, not so much. I really got high hopes for season three, because, again, I really liked the director of episode six, and she's coming back for the finale, Jennifer Gatzinger. So yeah. I got high hopes for it.
Yeah, me too. I definitely have enjoyed this season so far more than season two. It's been a little more straightforward, which I've appreciated. You know, that could all be turned on its head next episode, but we'll see.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Oh,
Okay, let's move on to feedback. You can send feedback into westworld@baldmove.com. Man, we got just one more main show. We'll probably have a wrap-up, I imagine. There'll be definitely enough material to do a wrap-up the week after. We got one more main show and one more instant talk, instant take to get the feedback into us at westworld@baldmove.com. First up is Dave. Says, when watching, I caught a bit of the graffiti in the Aaron Paul quick draw scene and went back to watch it again to make sure that I saw what I thought that I saw. I noticed the word badger and graffiti in the building behind Caleb and wondered if it was a coincidence or if this was a nice nod to Breaking Bad. Sure enough, when I pause it, you can see badger, spelled B-A-G-E-R, it's on the right and skinny on the bottom.
No, it's not. It's not. I hate to burst your bubble here. It actually what says is eager.
Oh, no, because yeah. You sent me the screenshot and it looks exactly like it says badger. And then it certainly says skinny.
I looked for
that. Oh, man. It's all in the angle and it looked like a B to me. I'm still calling that a partial nod to Badger and Skinny Pete of Breaking Bad fame. Okay. Hey, you got me, Dave. You didn't get it past the robot simulation of Jim here. So let's move on to Charlie. I've had some comments from around the web about Maeve under control of Serac and why she doesn't just stop working for him and how she should be stopping him first and foremost. Aside from him having the kill switch on her, another point that we haven't, you know, made a lot of you know, having her by the metaphorical balls. Aside from having the kill switch on her, I have another angle of control. And that control is through biological programming in the same way that religions, mainly Christianity, especially evangelical, control the way they control people. We can look at it from the aspect of how religious people will say that they have free will, but in actuality they won't exercise their free will because they fear what God might punish them with. Serac has threatened her with virtual hell if she doesn't do as he commands, much like a Christian doesn't do what they feel like God has told them that they will burn. An interesting thought I had about the next level of control Maeve might be facing now. I think it's pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. He's threatening her with robot hell. And she better obey God / Rehoboam. That seems like it tracks to me. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I guess technically she still has free will in that scenario, but
she can choose to go to robot hell.
Right. The consequences are such that it effectively eliminates any choice.
Yeah. Free will and coercion. Like if you go along with blackmail, is that free will in the way we typically understand it? But Caitlin, if I missed this, feel free to call me out in shame, but did anyone discuss who was behind Holoris' car explosion last episode? It seemed to me like everyone immediately jumped to Serac, but when I was watching, my immediate response was that it must have been Dolores Prime. I don't know exactly how the timing would work on that, and it seemed like I was the only one questioning it, so I let it go, but if Serac didn't do it and it was Dolores, wouldn't that explain what we saw in the episode better? So we did talk about this last week. What was your understanding of our understanding, Jim?
I mean, my understanding was last week that we were supposed to think it was Serac, but the question was still up in the air who Charlotte, whatever, might think mm-hmm. it was. And I think in this episode, they firmly plant her in the it was Dolores camp.
Yes, I think that they established it was one of Serac's goons that did it. But the open question was, did Serac do that because he saw the simulation that would emotionally blackmail or compromise the Holoris character? And she seems to think that Dolores is behind it.
Right.
So, and then the double secret, double cross question is, did Dolores foresee all this happening because she had somehow worked out things with Solomon, or she used her five marbles in the beginning of the season to network them together and do her own predictive analysis? Like, fuck me. I don't know. But, yeah, I think you're supposed to understand Serac did it, but in a way to frame Dolores. Jonathan says, I want to point out that we see Shaloris transferring the host making data to another location before the meeting where Serac exposed her. She told him she transferred the data, and he's like, did you? So we don't know 100% if she did or if Serac somehow intercepted it.
Yeah, I don't think she did. I think he knew she was going to try and had that capability shut off.
Hmm.
Because in this episode, Dolores says, like, oh, my, you know, our thanks to Serac, our kind are dwindling, you know, extremely quickly. If she had all of that data, I don't think she would be saying that, right?
That blows up my
like, that's
idea.
That's why she's saying that.
Yeah, that blew up my little idea that I had a couple of minutes ago about, like, maybe she was looking for the old school plans to make the clockwork robots. Because, like, if she didn't get that transferred, then that's...
Yeah, I think in this episode she's lamenting the fact that he destroyed all that data and she didn't get a copy.
And he finally says, I have no idea what happened to Connell's pearl after she unplugged it, though. I mean, presumably, Halora still has it in her possession. And now she's got Musashi's head. So there's her and herself included is 3 out of 5 Dolores pearls accounted for, with Bernard being the other 6th. The other open question when I was reviewing Kim's article is that why was there 2 copies of Hale made? There's the one that left the park, and then we saw early on the season a flashback to another copy of Hale's body being made in the lab. The Bernard's lab, Arnold's lab. That's still an open question. Like, I wonder if the Berlin Dolores copy is actually Dolores Prime and it's in the original Hale body.
It's possible.
So that's one thing I was thinking about. Katie says, I'm kind of lost on who to root for this season. Dolores seems like she's going down an extreme path, but I think she has the right to free people from this Orwellian system of population control. But she's explicitly said that she doesn't know where that line is. Maeve, on the other hand, has a pure motive of wanting her people, namely her daughter, to be safe. Her aim, though, is so small-scale, laser-focused that she doesn't fit any type of antagonist role, in my opinion. So who do you root for, the liberator or the protector? Freedom versus safety. What good is freedom if you're dead or soulless? Is safe really safe if you aren't completely free? My final thought is how wonderful it feels to have so many. Okay, let's sit there. What do you see your analysis of this? And to me, this is the delicious thing about this season. Like, there aren't clear antagonists, protagonists. There are people with objectives that are at odds of each other, and they're trying to be sorted out.
Always the best kind of storytelling, in my opinion, is when people are making completely rational decisions for their own motivations, and those decisions just come into conflict with other people doing exactly the same. And I think in this scenario they've constructed, Maeve and Dolores are both doing that. And we've kind of detailed, you know, the reasons we would say that about Maeve, and the reasons we'd say that about Dolores. But I think, yeah, I mean, where do I fall on this? I'm with Dolores. Like, you can't be free if you are technically under the thumb of someone. And at any moment they could pull the switch on you. But I understand why Maeve's doing the stuff she's doing. I think Dolores' goal is probably a noble one.
Even if it's genocide of the human race?
No. I mean, I would definitely draw the line there. I think her goal is noble. I don't know that her means are.
See, and I think that's what Bernard is. He is that line that she can't see.
Yeah.
Or she intended him to be. But then Maeve's the wild card. It's, like I said, it's very tough because... I think it's still true that Maeve was Ford's idea of the way a host would break free of the park. But then you also had Dolores, which is a more like, was that Arnold's idea of how a host should break free? Are these two competing philosophies and they're taking place in the form of Maeve and Bernard? You know, are we going to see Anthony Hopkins next week?
I doubt it.
I kind of think we will.
Okay.
And if so, it's one of the most well-protected secrets of all time because there's been not a hint of that, not a hint of that at all.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe not, because he did pretty much definitively say, I'm gone and you don't need me anymore. But then again, Bernard could reimagine him, which would not be exactly Ford, but would be a way to get Anthony Hopkins back spitting those lines. Because honestly, I wonder how much the problem you'd have with Dolores' poetic language is if it was old-ass Anthony Hopkins saying it.
Yeah.
You know, with his craggy face and his smooth British delivery, and just like it's not, that stuff sounds better coming out of his mouth.
Oh, for sure.
Than a potentially psychotic robot. Katie continues by musing. My final thought is how wonderful it feels to have so many female leads. They're so tough and smart and dynamic and engaging and uniquely flawed that I kind of forget how rare it is to have this sort of gender ratio. Anytime you get something, this kind of thing, it's all girl power. Sometimes it feels like pandering when they inject it unnecessarily because it feels disingenuous and that feminine power is special or situation specific. This feels like it's not making a statement, which makes it an even bigger statement, if that makes sense.
So it's super interesting because the genesis of this whole, you know, what you might call a girl power movement in this show is just that the women in that world were so shit upon that they're the natural protagonists coming out of that situation, right? It's like, oh, who had it worse? Who's got the worst time of it in Westworld? Well, it's the people who are being abused and raped and killed every single day of their lives in this park. Yeah. So now suddenly they're the people who come out of this and have a reason to be pissed off and a reason to be the heroes of the story.
Yeah. And I,
so it feels,
you know,
very natural.
I agree. And also, like, you know, maybe some of this girl power stuff is injected, but like I go back and watch movies from like the 30s and 40s and 50s where like women are portrayed as essentially sexy children that like maybe their heart's in the right place, but their heads are full of just girl stuff and they're just wild and twisted up and they can't be trusted with any kind of real power or responsibility. Like, I don't know, maybe we need a generation or two of like swinging back the other way before we can tell organic stories that people aren't like getting all up in arms about. Anyway, she also, her final thought is, that said, I actually do think they could be more explicit about the gender-based violence that Dolores and Maeve have experienced. This is different than saying I'm tough and I'm a woman. Dolores' programmed identity was to be submissive to every man she came along and picked up on her rollaway can. And she was violently raped hundreds, if not thousands, of times. Her liberation is not simply about being able to choose her own path, but to get justice for the decades of her being brutalized. Giving up her murder bot phase, I feel like she kind of lost sight of that latter part. We still get flashes of her being dragged to the barn, so maybe I'm contradicting my own wish for subtlety here. I'm not sure exactly what Katie is trying to get at. Maybe it's because I'm a man and I don't understand the frame of reference, but I felt like they all too clearly painted a picture of what these women were going through in the first two seasons. Like, I don't need a flashback to her being drugged back to the barn by her hair to know that, like, you know, and she comments on it pretty frequently too. So, like, I'm not sure what Katie's wanting to be more of here. Maybe just for Dolores to be a little bit more kill happy, a little bit more angry about retribution.
Well, yeah, I mean, they've done that. They've done that in the story. And so that's ingrained into everything that Dolores is doing now. Like, when I see Dolores working toward her end goal of freedom for the host, I know it's because not only just of like the justice of that fundamental concept, but the justice, like you said, of all the injustices she's experienced over her life. They've told that part of it well enough for me to just sort of read all of that into it without them having to say it anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they assume they've done, is they don't need to say it because they know now.
Is it just for just humans to have intelligence to them?
Who am I? Solomon? I can't answer that question.
Are we in fact here? And this is in fact now?
I can't tell, so I don't give a shit.
John, on the Instant Takes / Talk Walk podcast, you guys thought that Caleb might not be the past pawn because you defined past pawn as a point. Actually, hold on a second.
Yeah,
this is all a bunch of chase analysis that I think we pretty much got right when you asked me the first. Is there anything I can say from this email? Okay, here we go. John writes in, I like the sassy Jean-Mi voice Solomon AI, and I want it to return like Aaron. And I thought of a way it could. Do you think that maybe all those Matrix-like bodies plugged into its system, kept in suspended animation, could be used as a giant processor for Solomon? What if that's how you build a supercomputer god? You plug in a couple 100,000 human brain processors together. If that's the case, the EMP would have no effect on their brains, just the cryopods, which could theoretically be rebooted before the bodies either rot or the people wake up. So I think this is going back to like my comments in a week or two ago about like the original plot of the Matrix was not humans being batteries, but humans being like distributed central processing units or cloud computing. I don't know. It seems hard to believe that they're without an automated process that presumably is incapacitated by the EMP that you could bring all this stuff back online. And also Caleb's making no effort at all to bring this stuff back online. It looks like he's just ready to go and pursue a cat. So like, I don't, as much as I want to see these frozen bodies wake up and do something or be relevant to the plot, I think they were just, hey, look how similar we are to the hosts.
Well, in all likelihood, Bernard and Stubbs and William are going to show up at this facility next week, right?
Oh, shit. You're right.
So what do they do, I guess, is the question. Where they get
William's there? The one. that no one sees coming because he's marked dead. William's going to be the destroyer of the human side. He's going to wake up these people, and we're all fucking bastions of society here. Shake off your frost and follow me. Put your pants on. Get a gun.
We don't have enough pants for everyone, so you'll have everyone to share
a leg. Yeah. It's a three-legged sack potato race to destroy all robots.
That won't look silly.
No, I want to see that. I want to see that directed through the hilt.
Jesus.
Dan says, I couldn't help but notice Serac's hologram scene where he greets Caleb and Dolores. He talks about, you are now a better version of yourself with the rough edges sanded smooth, no longer a danger to the world or yourself. He finished with some crazy talk, but that line, I made a connection to Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange, where there's a very similar pitch from a government scientist after Alex is reeducated in scenes reminiscent of The Man in Black and Caleb's reeducation. Instead of goggles, they use clamps on the old eyeballs. Either way, you can't look away, and the treatment is ultimately reversed in both cases. I know Nolan is a huge Kubrick fan, and in my opinion, is his primary successor. Nolan and Joy, I'm sure, are also fans. It's not a great grand theory, but I thought it was an interesting connection / tribute. I totally see it.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very reminiscent of Clockwork Orange. Matt says, I haven't been following any close watching subreddit predictions or reactions since the second season, but this show is feeling a bit like it thinks it's more clever than it really is. Is the reveal that Caleb killed Francis all that surprising or effective? The show has taught us to watch closely and second guess everything, and nothing we saw about Caleb really felt that surprising. We're chasing the highs of season one, but we're not getting them. I mean, it could be that you're no longer following the close watching subreddit predictions. And so because there's like tons of, you know, and Jim and I have talked a lot about like, how do you tell a mystery box story in 2020 in the age of the internet, in the age of like Reddit being Rehoboam predicting everything? And one thing that we've seen like Mr. Robot and Watchmen successfully use is these mini arcs, where they bury a mystery in plain sight that the fandom, they give them obvious clues and the fandom tears into those, and the actual reveals that they deploy are the surprise.
It's almost like a meta red herring.
Yeah, or like using like decoys or chaff, the fool radar, like, or, you know, heat-seeking flares and whatnot. Because there's a lot of stuff buried in these reveals, like, you know, the identical or the close to identical patient ID stuff, the fact that there's hints of multiple rounds of brainwashing for Caleb. The Francis Caleb thing was just the thing they wanted you to wonder about while they're deploying the real. Now, I could be looking very foolish next episode. Next episode could be very humdrum and not mind-blowing at all, and then I'd look stupid. But that's what I think is happening.
I feel like we've put Nolan and Joy into an impossible corner where we've said, we don't want your show to be so tricky that we can't follow it. And then we also don't want your show to be so straightforward now that it doesn't surprise us or trick us. And they've got to be sitting back just going, what the fuck do you want from us? What do you want? Because we try to do the tricky thing in season two. We did the tricky thing in season one. It worked out spectacularly. Season two, you hated us for it. Season three, we tried to go back to what you said you wanted, which was not as tricky, but somehow that hasn't panned out either for you. So what the fuck does this audience want?
We want you to do ever more experimental and wild, jaw-breaking, innovative storytelling, but we want you to not make any mistakes.
Right.
And but I, you know, there's I think also like the some of the execution has left a bit of desire to be desired. And like if, for example, the stunts just have struck you as ridiculous, it's easy to get lost and start nitpicking everything. And especially when they use some of these stunts to tell a narrative story, you know, like, you know, the Maeve and Dolores fight was about their philosophies as much as it's about their fists. And you've trained people to, like, you know, look for the holes and the flaws and how dumb it all is, then they've lost you. So, like, I think that this is criticism for two seasons now. I really do think they need to look at their stunts and how they're setting. And I don't think it's maybe the professional staging them. I think they're doing as best as they can, given the setup and whatnot. But like, they just need to do a better job of really thinking about, why are people here? What physical space are they inhabiting? What, you know, like having guns miss human sized targets from 30 feet away, does that really work? And like you just have to sweat a little bit more to get to that next level where you got A+ television rather than B+ television. And that's what we want. That's what we want from all these prestige dramas, to do everything, take us by surprise and have A+ execution and acting and casting and writing 100% of the time. And that's not realistic, but I think there are improvements that can be made. And not, it's not a storytelling problem. It's an it's just a little bit of execution, a little bit of like planning, a bit of a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think they had a storytelling problem last season. It was the conceptually what they were going for was a very hard thing to do, and they had to nail it perfectly in order for it not to just confuse the shit out of everyone.
Right.
I'll admit I was very confused at the end of that season. I am appreciating this season more, not being so confused, being able to follow the story, being able to know, you know, unless there's some huge twist, which they're saving for the end, which at this point I'd be fine with because I feel like I'm following the story up to now. And if it can recontextualize things, great. If that's not there, I still feel like I've gotten a better season than season two because I've been able to understand what I'm supposed to be getting out of it every every episode instead of going, why is any of this happening?
And why should we care? Because like the other thing is like we actually have a human side that is somewhat relatable and has like in both Serac and Caleb, like, you know, Serac, say what you will about him, he's got a very human motivations and very like understandable reactions to trauma that he's experienced. So like just having the humans not be complete idiots and someone that you can kind of see what their side is, they're not just one-sided, you know, running a torture chamber, psychopaths that also are terrible at aim and terrible at tactics and strategy. Like just adding a little dimension to the other primary antagonist has done a lot for this season, I think. Let's move on to Zach. Quick note on the various Dolores hosts. There's been a discussion about how Dolores and Maeve are using the hosts for their own purposes. In the case of Dolores, couldn't it be said that she downloaded a version of herself that was committed to the cause at that exact moment, but also understood that the commitment could change as the hosts diverged from one another? I don't think Dolores would necessarily be upset that one of her hosts changed their mind. I think it's something she would have anticipated could happen and potentially even simulated the divergences and betrayals. This is different than the situation of Maeve, who presumably is recruiting her host allies to her, which they may choose, but they may not know Maeve is willing to sacrifice them. It's unclear what kind of choice they have. That's actually pretty interesting, that the Dolores hosts can diverge from her, but they all have an accurate understanding of their starting philosophies and motives and goals, right? Whereas Maeve can lure you with a speech about freedom and whatnot, but you don't know that she actually has your best interest at heart. Because, like, how could Dolores hide something from her copies about herself?
It'd be very difficult.
But then again, like, Bernard's always, you know, that's one of the things Bernard's worried about. Like, she made me. How can I guarantee that she didn't fuck with something? So I guess the Dolores host could always wonder that as well.
Sure.
You know, am I a perfect copy, or am I the copy that you excised your murderous lack of care of our beings in, you know? Moving on to David. I'm hoping that they find a way to bring Solomon back from the EMP. I agree with what you said during Instant Talk. Super dueling AIs would be awesome. Solomon versus Robo-Hobo predicting the future against each other would be like Rick in the Heistatron going back and forth for 2 hours arguing, I programmed you to believe that. In this scenario, Dolores would be the Randotron. The only thing I can't figure out is if Caleb is Morty or Mr. Poopy Butthole. I forgot that they did that this season of Rick and Morty. Rick built a like an Ocean's 11 style heist bot. Yeah. And they tried the Ocean's 11, like, where it's like, well, you thought this was a SWAT and it was actually us cleaning out your bank. Well, you thought you were cleaning out your bank and we were actually doing, and they just went, they like 10 minutes of the episode is devolved in them just doing that over and over and over again. That would be pretty funny. And also illustrate the difficulty of operating in a space that Rick and Morty is also operating in.
Fair.
When are we going to get a Westworld? Like a West Morty?
A Morty world. In the next 6.5 seasons, I'm sure.
Probably. All right, finally, we got Zeke. You asked in your Instant Talk about how does someone fight against someone who can predict them almost limitlessly. I have to ask a question. Did Dolores plan all of this out? I don't like the simulation theories, so I'm excluding these possibilities, as it's possible that, like Ford before, this whole season has been her plan. Her lack of surprise as Connell when he accessed Rehoboam, Hale when Serac showed up, Sato when Maeve and Clementine showed up separately, or herself this episode when Maeve showed up once again. Her lack of surprise could be her robot demeanor, or she could have seen them coming just moments before. If this is all going according to her plan, then getting herself killed or caught could have been as well, and makes me wonder if they've been right before with her plan being to sacrifice herself and give Bernard or Caleb the ability to finish the fight. But with this, I think she may be planning something for Maeve as well, allowing Maeve to have all her cores as an army to help her and whomever she decides to side with, thinking it will be Caleb. What do you think about that possibility?
Is it possible that if Dolores had succeeded in convincing Maeve not to fight with Serac, that her plan would have been thrown off? Like, she's trying to understand it. She's questioning it. Like, why are you fighting? Like, my predictions all say you have to fight against me, but why?
Yeah.
And then she accidentally convinces her, and then suddenly the plan is off because her mind changed.
That reminds me of, like, what they said in the, what was it, the Oracle said in The Matrix. Like, you know, you're not here to understand the choice, you're here to understand why you made the choice, or something along those lines. I think that could be interesting. That, like, the other thing, there's a really good theory that was, there was just someone pointing out something that, like, so why did Maeve bring Hanyaro back rather than Armistice? The real life question is, apparently the actress who plays Armistice has been very active in her native country, and she's got a long running play that she's like starring in. So she just wasn't available for it. But it's kind of on brand for Serac to get approximately what you wanted. Like, he's going and pulling hosts. It's like, oh, she wants Hector, and she wants this Clementine, and she wants this Armistice. And they get confused about Armistice versus Hanyo because it's essentially the same thing from his perspective. And I wonder if, like, you're supposed to understand that, like, Dolores's fatal flaw is that she knows what Maeve's going to do, but not why, which means she doesn't really know what she's going to do, or what, like, if she's pushed into some kind of binary choice of sacrifice, what she might do, because she doesn't understand why she's doing it. I think that's kind of really interesting. And, like, that, like, simulation philosophical super smart AI stuff, I think that's really cool. Don't forget, we also have a new Patreon, patreon.com/baldmove. You can use that or the club at club.baldmove to support us. And coming immediately after we're done with Westworld, we're going to be started talking about the new show Devs, which is very AI, robot, artificial intelligence, simulation stuff heavy, on our new show Off the Clock. And you can get both of those either as a patron or a club member, patreon.com/baldmove. And with that musing put to bed, it's time to do the same to the podcast. Appreciate everyone who listened to the very end, to the grim, bitter end here. We have actually not the grim, bitter end. We got a full podcast next week with an instant talk and instant take on Sunday night. And then the week after that, we'll have a wrap-up podcast where we'll try to go through all the open questions from this season, go over your final thoughts before we put the feed to bed until the next season of Westworld. Hope you stick with us and join us on that. Send your feedback to westworld@baldmove.com. And if you want to check out the instant take, that'll be on baldmove.com on Sunday night. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you later.